I'm sorry, but during the break, I had the best croissant I've ever had in my entire life.
Yes, and it comes from Six Depot, where Flavio Lichtenthal and Lisa Landry are the co-owners, and it's in Lenox, Mass., and we love them. They are great people.
My God, is that good. That is, yeah. Nothing could be finer, except for a wonderful concert here at Tanglewood.
Yeah.
Israeli conductor Asher Fish became principal conductor and artistic advisor of the West Australian Symphony Orchestra in Perth in March. Congratulations.
Yep. Starting March.
Yes.
Thank you.
Excellent.
He is a seasoned conductor in both operatic and symphonic worlds and a frequent guest to the great orchestras and the most renowned opera houses. His appointment to WASO, otherwise known as the West Australian Symphony Orchestra, is Fish's first artistic position with a symphony orchestra, and he is really wowing them.
He is known best for his interpretive command of core German and Italian repertoire of the Romantic and post-Romantic era, in particular Wagner, Brahms, Strauss, and Verdi. He will be conducting Brahms, Liszt, and Wagner, featuring pianist Garrick Olson on Sunday afternoon here at Tanglewood at 2:30, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Asher Fish to the roundtable this
morning.
Thank you.
So I'm just going to start up. That when Mehta, I think it was Mehta, went to Israel and conducted Wagner, there was real trouble.
He was the first to try, yes, and then Daniel Barenboim tried.
Oh, yes,
and
yes.
Even more trouble then. And then it was dead for about 10 years, and then I tried.
And what happened when you tried?
That was probably the last attempt anybody's making in the next decade, because it really went wrong. Because we were almost there. It was 2 years ago. We almost had the concert, and then last minute political pressure. Just all the venues refused to host us.
So what do you take away from that?
Yes, and disappointment, because I to do it the right way and to really persuade the population that it's all based on a lot of ignorance, and we were not going to just perform a concert, but we were going to have a whole day of discussions and explanations. And I also thought that what my predecessors didn't do is they try to do it with state orchestras or city orchestras, and I thought that it has to be a private orchestra. So I raised the money, and we hired the musicians, and everybody wanted to play, of course, because if you're a trombone player and you don't play Wagner, you jump at the opportunity. So the best musicians in Israel wanted to play. Everybody was on board, and still we failed. So
how do you feel you failed? I mean, if you look back on it, is there any – what was the missing ingredient then? Or is it one of those things that maybe you just can't do?
It's something you cannot explain, but this is the only thing in Israel, I would say, today that is a taboo to such an extent that even if we get close, there will always be somebody who will protest, and then the political pressure will come, and nobody's willing to take the risk.
But Wagner was a terrible man. We know he was a terrible man.
Of course.
Yes, and his music is incredible. I think that the only explanation is that Wagner was the devil, and he was able to create this beautiful music.
Yes, and if you create such music, then something has to be wrong with your mind. And he was definitely either a grown-up child. But he didn't only hate Jews. He was an anti-Semite, there's no question. But he hated everybody. He hated Brahms. He hated Jesuits. He hated Catholics. He hated the French. Yeah. So it's a whole mixed thing. It's a very long discussion. But I think that there's a lot of ignorance.
Yes, and how much does being an Israeli yourself, citizen, how does that affect your artistry?
Being an Israeli?
Yes.
Well, I recently was thinking about it. Why am I so attached to this kind of music? And I think recently I've come to the conclusion that if I look back at Jewish history, an Israeli history. I'm an Israeli. I was born. I'm a Hebrew. I call myself a Hebrew because what makes me Jewish or Israeli is the language, is the Hebrew language. And before we had the Hebrew language, we didn't have our own culture. We had borrowed culture. And this is what Wagner says in his notorious book about the article about Judaism in music. But this is what he says, but it is right. And Theodor Herzl, who read this article, understood that the only way to save Jewish culture is to leave Europe, go to Israel, and have our own language. And since we have our language, we have a culture. But for me, it's important to connect to what I find is really the golden, I mean, religious Jews will kill me for that, but the golden era of advanced Judaism is pre-Second World War in the center of Europe for me. Because they have realized that the religion was stifling to them and not promoting their culture. And they have assimilated in a way, culturally speaking. They left the religion and they were the greatest supporters of the music of Wagner and Liszt, and they were playing in the orchestras. And then this world, unfortunately, had died, was killed. And I'm working a lot in Europe now, and for me, it's like trying to connect back to what was happening in Jewish world in Central Europe before the war.
Do you sense
that's my mission.
Do you sense anti-Semitism anywhere in
Europe?
I would have not stayed there.
I don't. I think that a Turk in Germany or a Moroccan in France is feeling much more hatred today than any Jews in Europe. And I think that we're beating on the anti-Semitic, of course, understandably so. But I do not. I've spent now many years in Europe and I haven't had one incident which made me think, maybe I'm not welcome here.
Oh, interesting.
Talk a little bit about, so as I mentioned, Brahms, Liszt, Wagner that you'll be performing.
Well, we thought to do like a concert on the what is called the War of the Romantics, and this is an interesting war that hopefully all wars would have such fantastic outcomes and results. But Brahms representing the old school and continuation of the classical period and Beethoven, and then the revolutionaries. Primarily Liszt, who was the first one, and he started this new form called tone poem, and we're playing his first tone poem, Les Preludes. And then the person who I think learned from Liszt, but really perfected the art, was Wagner. So we're playing Brahms in the first half, the second piano concerto, and then two works by Liszt and Wagner in the second half. Yeah.
Do you think the average concert goer can feel a bit of a conflict?
Oh, yes. You can hear the structure in the Brahms, the formality. It almost sounds like a big symphony. It's a concerto, but it's the most symphonic maybe of all concertos. It's big. It has four big movements. The orchestra is not accompanying the pianist. It's really part of a main character in this symphonic story. And then you hear the beginning of the Liszt is already, even though it was written a few decades before the Brahms Second Concerto, what to ears, to musical ears in those days would be real avant-garde, because all of a sudden there's no form, there's no formality, it's all telling a story, it's really romantic, it's new, the orchestration is new. And then the Wagner, of course, is like modern music in comparison.
When you do this work with a famous soloist, and where it's a new sort of form, the orchestra is, of course, the Boston Symphony is supposed to be, many people think, the best orchestra in the world, or certainly one of the best orchestras in the world. How do you, as a conductor, have to balance the soloist and the orchestra?
Oh, I think that one of the traits of a great orchestra is that they know exactly. In a Brahms concerto, the dangers of overwhelming, of being too big, but keeping still at the same time, keeping a dialogue with the soloist, and really trying not to make it a solo like a, not even a Rachmaninoff concerto, but I would say if you look at a Schumann or a Chopin concerto, the role of the orchestra is very big, and they know it. And I think that a great orchestra enjoys playing such a concerto.
So have you had a conflict with an orchestra where you think, well, maybe they didn't know it? In other words, maybe they're...
Oh, yeah, you have to, of course, you have to fight for balance and say this is too loud, and if nothing works, you have to reduce the number of strings so it is not too loud, etc.
So when you say fight for balance, what's the fight look like?
Oh, the fight? First you're polite, and then if it's in Israel, you will scream, shake it.
Shake it, shut up!
Shut up, yeah.
And this happens in a relatively short period of time.
Here in Tanglewood, in one rehearsal?
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
When you're working with someone like Eric Olson, Talon's question, what is that experience? What is that like in dealing with someone of...
Well, I can tell you that the... what I did, the last thing I did in Israel was in May, I conducted the finals of the Rubinstein competition. Now, this is a serious piano competition. And I had six young pianists who were playing big concerto with the Israel Philharmonic for the first time. And when you work with young pianists, you take charge and you really have to know how to lead them and to give them ideas with respect, of course, to what they're doing. And then you come and you work with somebody like Eric Olsen, who has played this concerto many, many more times than I have conducted it. Has so much experience in romantic big piano music that you it's much more a cooperation and making music together than really leading and helping a young pianist shine through in a final level of a competition.
It'll be a beautiful performance. Asher Fish will be conducting Brahms, Liszt, and Wagner, featuring Garrick Olsen on Sunday afternoon, 2:30 here at Tanglewood. Maestro, thank you so much for being with us. What a great pleasure
to have you share your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Roundtable's live broadcast from Tanglewood on WAMC.